Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is David Moyes.
This is Jaap Stam.
This is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Adam Lallana.
This is Jurgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
It's The Big Interview again, this time with the former coach of River Plate, Villarreal. Amongst others, Manchester City, West Ham, and the current coach of Real Betis, Manuel Pellegrini. A tiny bit longer introduction to the first part of our interview this time. Simply to say that, well played by Martin Gregg, who fixed up the travel and the accommodation and helped with the research, while Neil White swanned off to San Francisco. Don't know what that's all about, but you'll find out. Thanks to Pete Jensen, who was fundamental in fixing up access to Betis and Manuel Pellegrini, a dear chum of his. Thanks for that, Pete. It was brilliant for Martin and I to be there. Martin, I don't think, had been in Sevilla, and we caught the capital of Andalusia on one of its good days. You know, it wasn't 102 degrees. It was only about 25, 26 degrees, but the sky was beautifully blue. The city was quiet and methodical, which is not the norm, particularly so near to Easter and then the Feria. But to go to travel through Seville for the two of us was a real joy. The Betis training ground is along a really beautiful wide avenue flanked by palm trees. And there's a couple of good things there in that for me, it was, I mean, I've been many, many times since to watch Real Betis play. But for me, it was, particularly with Martin, a fellow Scot there on his first visit, it was a real jolt to the memory banks of the Benito Villamarin, where Manuel Pellegrini has begun to turn out one of Europe's most exciting sides. It was a beautiful memory of what's exactly 41 years ago in June, where, coincidentally, I'd been at La Rosaleda, which was the first stadium I went to in Spain back in 1982 for Scotland, New Zealand. So last Saturday I was at La Rosaleda, and this week we were at the Benito Villamarin, which is right adjacent to Real Betis' training ground, something that's very unusual in modern football. There's usually a huge distance between a club's training ground and their and where they play their matches. It's very impressive, very likeable training centre that Betis have, was in the same neighbourhood as myself and Graham Runcie, Ali Fraser and BF went to watch Scotland play against Brazil. And the cracking thing was we jumped into a taxi from our hotel to get to the Luis del Sol training ground, and the taxi fella was a wizened old kind of gnarled whippet of a man with an old sort of 1950s fisherman's cap, beautifully dressed, a wee lithe thing and full of cackles and laughs. And a Seville supporter who when we owned up as to who we were going to interview, said, no, I'm Sevillista, I always will be, but if Betis are playing anybody outside the city, I want them to win too. I'm old style. Brilliant. He then recounted two superb anecdotes about how he'd been a fan at the Benito Villamarin back in June 1982, like I was, like Dange was. And he'd been entranced. He was a good deal older than me, but he'd been entranced by the Brazilian woman following the national team, as indeed the four Scots that I mentioned to you were then too. He loved the atmosphere. Happily, he couldn't quite remember the score, so I told him we won, and then shamefacedly admitted 5 minutes later that we didn't. And he'd also been in the town working when Celtic came to Sevilla for the UEFA Cup final against Porto, and he had your traditional anecdotes about they were very polite to us, mental cases in other respect. They drank the town dry, and he said, thankfully, the Crucampo that we make here is, you might as well be drinking puddle water. All of this was a really nice setup to go and meet Don Manuel Pellegrini. In this first part of the interview, one of the things that stands out is the crazy truth that when he was a coach at the very early part of his career, in the late 80s, he'd just become a coach after having been a successful, talented centre-half for a 15-year professional career. He decided, with four games left of the season, that to follow up on the training courses he'd been at Coverciano, which is the Italian FA Centre of Excellence, and in Lille in France, the international coach, licensing coach that was being laid on at the equivalent to St George's Park in Burton, the old FA Centre of Excellence, Lilisol, in 1988, from Chile, was the place he had to be with four games left of his season. He went, and one of the things that stands out to him was a 1988 management course laid on by then Alec Ferguson, manager at Manchester United for about a season and a half at that stage, and frankly, struggling. Yet, Fergie laid on a managing coaching course at the Cliff, Manchester United's old training ground, which stood out to Pellegrini. They became pretty firm friends over the years. So Pellegrini talks about what he learned in Lillisol in the 80s. He talks about the regret of going back to find that his team under his assistant coach had lost three out of three games, and because they lost the last game when he was back, they were relegated by one goal of a margin. He talks really well about how having extensive knowledge of art, language, history, cinema gives you an edge as a manager when you're leading a group. And it's brilliant. It's a brief section, a brief discussion on Villarreal. But wait till you hear what he says about having a midfield including Riquelme, Senna, Pires and Santi Cazorla. I promise you on my honour, you're going to quite enjoy Manuel Pellegrini Part 1 on The Big Interview. On The Big Interview, we've had many coaches that we respect and love and whose work has made us happy over the years. And in the case of, particularly in the case of Manuel Pellegrini, who we have today, your work at Villarreal, at Malaga, at Betis, you've done other spectacular work. Before I knew what you were like in Chile, in Argentina, in Ecuador, at Manchester City. But as a guy who's been living in Spain for 21 years, first of all, thank you for all the spectacular football I've watched. Thank you for joining The Big Interview. It's kind of you. The reason that we've asked you here today is that we want to understand a bit more about you and your ideas. And Manuel, one of the strangest stories I think that I've heard about your background is the importance and the impact of going from South America to Lillisol in 1988. Now, I'll explain to you. We're within touching distance of the Benito Villamarín, my second stadium in Spain in 1982. We came to the World Cup, and a guy called Alex Ferguson, who was our neighbour in Aberdeen, got us tickets and took us out to dinner, and he was our chaperone in 1982. Mm. And he coached my team, Aberdeen, for many years before Manchester United. And I remember seeing you in the UEFA Elite Coaches Forum, and at the lunchtime, you'd come from an interview, and I saw Alex Ferguson holding one chair for you and shooing away Rafa Benitez or Mourinho, I don't know. No, this one is for Manuel Pellegrini.
One, let's talk about the effect that Alex Ferguson, your battles with him have had, your friendship with him. But you went to Lilisol in 1988 to learn, and how did you get there?
Well, I will try to explain so many years ago, but well, I was a professional football player for around 15 years in Chile, and also I studied in the university, an engineer. I studied 6 years in the university. And I always thought that when I finished my career as a football player, I was going to continue working in engineering, not in football. But I knew a famous Chilean coach, that his name is Fernando Riera, that he started a little bit trying to me to continue my career after the player as a manager. So listen to him, with a friend of mine, Arturo Salas, that also is a very famous manager in Chile that has a lot of different works. We started going to different countries. First, in 1985, we went to Coverciano.
In Italy, in Florence, yes, which is the Italian FA Center of Excellence,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. After that, we went to French, also to another course in Lille, and was the option to come here to Lillesol. And we sent all our papers, and it was an international course, so they accept us, and we came here. That year, 1988. Yes,
88.
Sir Alex Ferguson was just starting working with Manchester United.
Correct.
He came from Aberdeen, from Scotland, a lot of years. And when he made a work session with Manchester United and during the course. So it was the first time that I saw him. And after that, to that meeting in UEFA in Zurich, well, we played against Villarreal 4 times with that Manchester, and the 4th time was 0-0 in Manchester and in Villarreal. So, well, in that moment, I always talked with him after the game, that so many times in England, that I think it's a good option to do it. Both manager talk after the match with a cup of wine or with a.
It's a nice tradition.
Yes, a good, nice tradition that I think that it must continue in always, but. Well, I started knowing him in that moment, and after that, well, playing championship, before the champion start every year, and I have the option to play 7 times the champion. That meeting of the different managers in Zurich, well, I continue working and talking with him.
Maybe you don't remember exactly the course that Sir Alex put on in 1988. I'll accept this, but I guess you went to the old training ground, the Cliff. But between that course and Lilisol, what did you learn? Because to cross the Atlantic, to go to Italy, to France, and then England, I imagine that there must have been very significant. And what people don't know is that you were coaching then, and the club that you were coaching still had 4 games to go, and you went to do the training course while the season was still alive. So there must have been an idea that something that you could learn something extremely special. What did you learn in that trip to Lillisol?
Well, a lot of different things. First of all, to working in small side pitches. You normally, the week, in the way you program the week, is so different than today. But it was the first time that I saw the training in small space reduced.
So games in reduced spaces
all in reduced space.
To make the players play.
To make the players in the small place to touch, to play one or two touch. So there's a lot of possession in small sides, pitches also. Well, I think that was the most thing that I learned in that course, in the way that. Because in that moment in South America, you always work, always. With a complete pitch. Maybe a normal week in South America in that moment was Tuesday, you work most of the physical work. Wednesday, you work physical work with some technical work. Thursday, you always do 90 minutes in the whole pitch. Friday, you reduce a little bit the charge, and Saturday or Sunday, you play. But normally, in that moment, you always did 90 minutes in the complete pitch.
And then, I mean, South America is a huge continent, but in general, or in Chile, Argentina, was the football maybe more technical and more on the floor, but slower?
Yes, slower, more technical, without any doubt. In that moment, also here in England, the football was always box to box.
Yes.
As soon as you arrive to the other box and the most amount of crosses you can do or goalkeeper kick from box to box.
It's only just changing in the last few years from 1988.
No. I think that changed a lot when Arsène Wenger arrived to England. He brought with him four or five French players, with technical players. And I think that also Alex Ferguson, that in that moment dominated absolutely the English football with Manchester United. He saw that Arsenal was winning also the FA Cup with another football, and I think that he made a little bit, not completely change, but the football in England mixed a lot.
To adapt a little bit.
No, I don't know if the word is adapt. I think that he mixed both football.
Mm-hmm.
Because Arsène Wenger started winning the Premier League, he makes brilliant season with Arsenal. I think that also England, in the way that they couldn't win the Champions League, they saw another teams, maybe Barcelona or Real Madrid, that were technical players. To recover the ball was not so easy. I think that moment in England, you don't need to work to recover the ball. You don't need to pressure in for the ball because you always play directly. All the teams throw the ball as soon as they can to put it inside the box of the other team. And when you arrive to Europe and you try and the other team start 1, 4, 5, 10, 8 times touching, you can't get the ball. So I think that was a change in England football that now is a mix of both football. And that's why I think that they improve a lot.
But in 88, for sure, in England, the ball was mostly still being played quite long.
Absolutely. All balls long. I remember that after I finished that course, I went to see the final of the FA Cup. The pitch with a lot of mud. Yeah. And the ball directly from the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper threw the ball 3 or 4, 5 meters in front of him, and nobody comes to disturb him to kick that ball.
It seems crazy now.
I think that now it's impossible to play that football. It was impossible after, first of all, with the Premier League, because yeah, the Premier League started in 92, 93, and all the pitches were the best pitches of the world.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with Host Red sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book Host Red sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
When I moved down to England to work, I remember going to a football exhibition at Wembley. So we're talking maybe about 95, 96. And Ruud Gullit was there then, either just joining Chelsea or maybe already player boss of Chelsea. And he was funny. He stood up in front of a big auditorium and he said, "I've always loved English football. Because when we played against you for Holland or AC Milan, I didn't stay in the midfield and attack. I went back to stand next to the centre-halves. I waited for the ball to come in the air. I took it down on my chest, and then we began to play. Thank you very much. Which was a great way to take the piss out of English football. But there was a breakdown of the ideas of continental Europe and England. Therefore, the logical thing to ask you is, although you had a spirit of adventure and learning, you always have had a spirit of learning, in 1988, why England? And why did you discover an interesting thing about working tight in small spaces in the coaching area when the league was still playing completely differently? To me, it's an interesting thing you discovered.
Yes, but I don't know why. Really don't. Why I came to Lillesol? Because I went to France, to Italy, and to England, and I made also the course in Chile. I wanted to know different ways of what football was in those different countries.
But even then, could you watch English league football in Chile?
Yes, we watched it, not too much, but we saw where the better course in international course in Europe, and we came here. So, but the same way I came to England, I also went to Italy and to France. It was different ways. Italy was absolutely different. International course was all the course. In England, all the complete course were you working as a manager.
Okay.
In England, you were always listening to a manager in the way you must work. But you never practice in the pitch. Just talk, just as you in university, you were knowing about tactical football and defending football. Was also for me very useful in my career, also the COVID channel. But it were absolutely three different ways to see what football in that moment was.
And am I right in thinking that this spirit of learning, spirit of adventure, comes from, apart from your determination to be excellent, comes from your parents? Did you grow up in a family which said, read a lot, learn a lot, try to develop yourself?
Yes, absolutely. One of the... I think that one of the most important things when you are a small boy, a child, is what your father demands from you. And I had to my father that was a workman, that he studied by himself. He didn't went to the university. He finished the school and he studied working for himself about building construction. And he had after that 20 or 30 years with a very good office. And my mother that was always reading. What she can, she always also speaks English, French, and Spanish, and she was always with a book. Every time I arrived from the school to my house, I saw my mother reading a book, and she always demand for ourselves to read, because it's the only way that you can learn is reading all different things. And yes, I always try to improve myself, and I always try to know new things, to read about different subjects, and one was one of the reasons why I tried to learn a lot if someday I decided to dedicate my life to football.
You've made me curious, because I know Alex Ferguson very well, his kids, his wife, his brother, because they lived in my city, then I moved to England and I followed their careers, but I know he's a little bit like you. He's a huge curiosity for history, for books, for documentaries, for politics, for workers' rights, for cinema. And these are things that you and he really share beyond football.
I didn't know about Alex Ferguson about that, but now I understand why he was so good manager, why he was the best manager maybe of the world so many years. I think that if you have your mind open to know a lot of different things around football, not just football, I don't think that you can be a good manager. So you need to know language and to read history and to see movies and a lot of different things. That when a player see that in front of him is a manager prepared in a lot of different things about not only football, I think that you have more authority,
more trust, and more power of communication.
Most of all. More trust in you and what you can help him a lot of things, because the football players they don't have just problems inside the pitch. They have also, I think, the most difficult thing for a manager is to how you work with the human group, the 25 different personalities that you must try to share with them a lot of different experience. I think that part of the manager is more important, or at least the same importance, that what you know about football.
I understand and agree. We're going to return to that subject exactly. But we have socios who always support us, who always write questions to us. And we ask them for a couple of questions. One of them, Chris Brooks, says, "Hello, my question for Manuel would be, what to you seemed different about the way that people speak about the game of football in England?" He means primarily in the media and press conferences. "And what types of questions you would generally be asked in England compared to working in Spain or Argentina or Chile?" I think it's an interesting question because it isn't just about the media, it's about what the culture of speaking about football is like.
Yes. For me, it's absolutely different, but completely different. No? Because in England, I just to compare England with Spain. In Spain, I think that you have the media's absolutely divided. The media of Madrid and the media of Barcelona, they are enemies. Or Valencia, of Sevilla, every media of that city goes with the team of that
city. You can see which colors they wear, the media.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they never be with supporting Barcelona against Real Madrid. The media of Madrid or the media of Barcelona. I think that in England you have a media for the whole team.
Team.
Yes, but I live in London, I live in Manchester, and I never read the news in Manchester against the team of London. They were more objective to see the game, who played better, who played bad, not always thinking that in London they are doing something to damage the teams of Manchester. Well, a lot of things that is that. The culture, the mentality is different. That's why I say so many times that the best football may be you play in Spain, but the best league is in England. About the fans, about the pitches, about the media, that I think that they have more
objectivity
about what happened during the game and against the team. That's for me is the most different.
That's nice to hear. Then you talked about Europe and South America there, and I remember you saying that one of the key things you do is jugar por bandas, but you also said that one of the objectives that has helped you succeed is to bring the technical skills of South America, but with the speed of movement, speed of thought, the velocity of a game of Europe, and you've tried to mix them. I wonder if one of the great examples of that is the place of Roman Riquelme in the Villarreal team that you had, where so many players were quick to think, quick of vision, quick technically. The football was quite intense. And siempre, the idea was always, if possible, to move forward. But Roman also played at slightly his own, brilliant quick brain, but he played at slightly his own speed. And Robert Ryan asks us whether there's still a place in today's game for a number 10 like Roman Riquelme. What do you think about that as being one of the great blends of your coaching lifetime?
Well, because I think that technical plays makes always the difference. You can do a lot of tactical movements, but if the ball doesn't arrive in exactly space that you need, all the tactical movements are wrong. So I think that, well, in Villarreal was a mix. I have a midfielder. That was a pleasure to see them play football because they lost one ball in 1 month. They play there, Roman, Marco Senna, Robert Pires, Santi Cazorla, so it was impossible for them to lose a ball. It was not in their mind. And maybe as when I was a professional football player, I saw all those technical players, how they make the difference during the game. I was central back. My strength thing was the tackle, the heading, the different things, but I always see that the technical players make the difference.
Heading, but didn't you also score a very technical headed goal for Universidad against Católica?
Against Colo-Colo, I think.
And Colo-Colo.
Yes, yes.
A nice diving header.
Because I have a very good jump. I jump very well also because I play also basketball, volleyball, football. So I had a good timing.
But you remind me of one day I went with the Celtic manager to study at Juventus with Lippi. And he gave us 2-3 days. The Celtic manager asked me to fix it, so I came. We saw the training and the diet, and Lippi sat down like this over dinner in the old Comunale when it was the training ground and they were playing at Delle Alpi. And he said to Tommy Burns, and to me, he said, when I was playing for Sampdoria, more or less the same era as you playing in Chile, more or less, he said, I was the libero, which meant I played behind the four players, not libero at all. And the clubs, the coach said to Lippi, he said to me, if you can even see the halfway line, never mind crossing it, you'll be fined and you'll be dropped. And Lippi said to us that he decided then, as a player, when I'm a coach, attack. And of course he became clever and successful as a coach.
Yes, of course.
But he became famous for the tridente and the pressing and the complete reverse of his playing career. He went, no, not like, okay, like this to earn a living as a player, but when I'm a coach, like that. That's similar to what you're saying?
Yes, I think so. It's similar. It's in a way, when you start as a manager, I think that also football is developed. Football 20 years ago, it's not similar to what you play today. It's another football. Now you need more mobility, reduced pace, touch, play with one or two touch till the last third, that you must do different things. But the football has changed a lot also. But I continue thinking exactly in the same way that when I start this career. The technical players make the difference during the game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.